thanks again to everyone else that's done a reading, helped us open the meeting, and I'd like to take this chance to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Welcome Angela, welcome Paul, glad you're with us. Big welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room that are going, and we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So, okay, well, we are a speaker meeting tonight, and it gives me real pleasure to introduce this speaker tonight. This person has been a friend of the Higner for a long, long time. Used to come quite regularly when back in the days when we were struggling away on Skype, and I have a great deal of respect for this lady. It's really interesting. I was just thinking before the meeting started that one time Higner used to be a big fish in a small pond, and we're now a small fish in a big pond. And Denai started a couple of online meetings that have done really well and are great to attend. I attend them when I can, and she's, her commitment to service and her commitment to Narcotics Anonymous is awesome. She was involved in some of the early days of the fellowship in the UK. You may or may not choose to share some of that. That's up to her. So I'm really looking forward. I always love when she shares. I love what she has to say. And with that, I'm going to introduce you to Denai, who's going to share her experience, strength and hope, journey through Narcotics Anonymous for 40, 45 minutes, whatever she's comfortable with, whatever you're comfortable with, Denai. So Denai, please share with us. The floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. I am Denai and I am an addict.
Hello, Denai.
Hi, Denai.
Hello, everyone. Steve, that was such a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much. And as you were saying this, it took me back to the days where there were very few online meetings, and Higner and some other places, and they at home were my refuge, were the place where I would come to stay in recovery and to connect with other people who have the same addiction problem as I do, and who are seeking recovery in the same way that as I do, in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And thank you and everyone else who keeps these meetings going through thick and thin. And I really hope that you continue for a long time to come. My clean date is September 4, 1984. Steve asked me to mention it in the beginning, and I must say that I didn't realize that today it would be one of the sort of long type shares. I thought I was going to be sharing for 20 minutes, so I am just going to share, and as often happens when I start to speak, I find that I can just carry on. And I was just thinking, how one of the dangers, in a way, not exactly a danger, but something that might happen to someone who has a lot of clean time, decades of clean time. Maybe I need to speak about myself. So something that maybe could happen to me, which I would not like to happen, and I like to stay aware of it maybe happening, is that I can become very fixed in my identity in NA, that I am this person who has this story and shares in a certain way, and I am this person, and there might be at some point, I might just become something that was true some time ago, but it no longer is true today. But I kind of keep being that person just because I think this is what is expected of me. I am in the process right now with with one or two other addicts of translating a book, an NA book. And it's not really a book that is my favorite book. It's the Guiding Principles, the Spirit of the Traditions. But when I do service, I don't necessarily do it just for me. I do it because maybe other addicts who do not have access to the literature in their own language would like to read this book and make up their own mind whether they like it or not. And so we are translating this book because we have been asked by the Greek region. I should say I am Greek. We have been asked, and I'm part of the translation committee there. We have been asked to translate it. And it has been going on for quite a while now. Anyway, we have reached tradition 6, which also happens to be one of my favorite traditions. And one of the, you know, there's a lot of sort of fluffy, noisy, irrelevant commentary that goes on, I think, in the book. But one of the paragraphs that we were translating seemed to be very relevant, and it was about defining the word prestige. You know, what is prestige, and that the sixth tradition talks about. And the sixth tradition, just as a reminder, is that an NA group would never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And so the word prestige is mentioned in there. And I think in terms of what I have been saying, maybe if I start to believe myself to be this sort of set person who has X amount of clean time and does X amount of service and works X amount of program, I maybe without even knowing start to build some kind of prestige around it. And I really would like to guard against that, because prestige in a way is the opposite to humility and to unconditional service and to also to some kind of to anonymity, really. So it was good for me the other day to read that and to ponder on that. I got clean. I am Greek. I am right now. I am sitting in Lisbon in Portugal, where I have been living for the last maybe six odd years. And I got clean in London. So I moved to London when I was 17 to go to study there. I went to university there, and I started using as soon as I got to London. I always had had a fascination with drugs. Even before I started using them, I would just read stories in newspapers or magazines about all these very cool people who used to take a lot of drugs and, you know, die young and live life to excess. And it all just seemed like, wow, this is amazing. This is the kind of thing I want to do when I grow up. So the mental obsession with the disease had appeared in my life long before any type of physical compulsion appeared. And so one of the things that prevented me, I think, was that I was living with my parents, I was in my family, and so as soon as I was able to move away from my family and found myself in a different country, in a different city, then I pretty much immediately started to put my dream of using drugs into reality. And this was in 1977. London at that time was, there was a lot of music things going on. There was punk and new wave, and everybody was taking a lot of amphetamines and going out dancing and listening to these small bands. It was a very exciting time. And I still think it was a very exciting time. So I started, this is what I started doing. And pretty soon I was just using something or other the whole time. And I managed to scrape through my first year. Second year with you, I was just completely unable to do the exams. I hadn't slept for a very long time. I was very high on something, and I just failed the exams. So that was kind of one of the many examples where my life became unmanageable because of my use of drugs. And even though at that time, I of course didn't know anything about step one and powerlessness and unmanageability and the connection between the two. Now, when I look back at it, I can see that the only reason I failed my exams was because I was powerless and I was taking too many drugs. You know, that was the only reason. But at the time, it felt like I had failed, I had personally failed. And I could not recognize myself. I could not recognize, like, who is this person who until now was so gifted academically and now has flunked every single exam. And this sense of alienation was something that became increasingly more and more dominant. And because I couldn't recognize exactly who I was and what I was becoming, I built a story around what was happening. And this is part of the denial, you know, building some kind of story so that I wouldn't have to face the reality of the situation. And the story was that I was living a very cool, alternative lifestyle. And I wanted to be with the people who had dropped out, and I didn't want to be with the straight people and the squares and part of society. I wanted to be outside all of that. So that was the story. And so then I spent, and anything that threatened the validity of that story, I really knew how to shoot it down and one of the best ways to avoid being confronted with reality was to not hang around with people who were not using, because they might tell me something that I didn't like. And so I just ended up surrounding myself with people who were using, people who were like me, and including my husband at the time. I got married to another using addict. So the using kind of progressed, you know, I took dope, I took a lot of speed. And at some point I discovered heroin and I thought this is really where it's at and this is where how I want to feel for the rest of my days. Sort of 7 years later, after the time that I first started using, I ended up getting into legal trouble, and the alternative, like I had to go on trial because I had drugs on me. I was busted with drugs, and the options were either go to prison or go to a treatment center. So I ended up in this treatment center in London, and at that time I knew nothing about NA. I knew nothing about anything, but I just knew that I didn't really want to go to prison. So I was very, very motivated and very, very willing to do anything they told me to do, because I had, you know, I was so greatly relieved that I was there and not in a prison cell. Having said all this, I should also say, so I arrived on a Friday night, and then on a Saturday morning, They took us across the road to my first NA meeting, which was at 12 noon. It was called Early Risers. It was packed, it was a big basement underneath a church. Well, it was kind of a church hall, but it was pretty big. And smoke filled room and people everywhere. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know anybody there, but I remember feeling kind of excited about being in this room with all these people. The atmosphere seemed quite buzzy in a way, a little bit unstable and a little bit crazy and a little bit, I don't know exactly, but it also seemed to be very joyful, and it seemed to be quite vibrant, and it kind of made me feel that I wanted to go back there and see what this thing was all about. And this feeling of wanting to go back, which I guess we talk about in the meetings the whole time, right? We say, keep coming back, keep coming back. And this is exactly how I felt. I felt that I wanted to keep coming back. And from the first meeting that I went to. So while I was in treatment, I stayed there for 3 months, and then I used once again. And I used because I had not understood what powerless means. And what happened was that I went to have tea with some friends of mine that I knew from my using days, and they were smoking a joint, and in my mind, I was really totally convinced that I was not going to smoke it. I had a court case coming up. My parents had really gone out of the way to arrange everything for me to go into treatment, and I had full willpower, that I was not going to do this thing. But then when the joint came around, I just smoked it. And I know now that I smoked it because I am powerless. And if I am around people who are using, especially, with 1 month clean, chances are that this is what's going to happen. I am going to end up smoking the joint. And this is what happened. But after that, and this is the last time I used, and after that, I had a kind of understanding, a different understanding of what it means to be an addict, and that I really needed to just stick with people who were in recovery. So then, I ended this part of the treatment, and then I came out, and I didn't have to go to prison, and so I threw myself into recovery in early London NA. So in 1984, London NA would have been 4 years old, and some of us here, know the story. An addict called Dudley S, who had been going to AA, and had stopped drinking but could not stop using the rest of the substances, had gone to the States, and there he was taken to an NA meeting. Someone told him that, you need to come to an NA meeting. And so he went to an NA meeting and then came back to London and started NA together with another addict who also had been going to AA, but really was not at home there, called Johnny H, and a third addict called Keith. All of these people are now dead and have passed. But what they did do was that they started NA in London, and did some, especially Johnny H, I think, did some incredible amounts of service to start meetings, to set up committees, to get the ball rolling, and you know create areas and regions and so on, so that when I came in, it had already been going for 4 years, but it was still pretty small. I think the where to find, which is a list of all the meetings that were available in London or the UK. Where to find probably would have been the UK. Now, I should not say this because I'm not sure, but I don't think there were more than 30 meetings. And London is a big city. The UK is a big country. And so my take on all this was, if I was asked to do something, someone said, can you step in and be the secretary for the meeting, or can you do coffee, or you know, can you be the treasurer? I just said yes, and the reason I said yes was partly because I had a lot of time and I didn't have anything else to do, and partly because I really enjoyed hanging out with all the other people who were in the meetings, because I couldn't be with my using friends. I had to be, and these were my new friends. And also because if we didn't do the things that needed to get done, they would just not get done. So, and I really liked the meetings. So if I wanted I wanted the meetings to continue, well, then I had to do something to contribute towards the meeting continuing. And again, in this way, without really knowing much or anything about Tradition One, my personal recovery really was connected to a common welfare, because if NA didn't exist, my personal recovery wouldn't exist either. And so all these, and this is something that I often find in recovery, there is an experience that I go through, and maybe I don't actually have the words for it, the program words for it, but then when I look back and I find that there is a step, or there is a tradition, or there is some passage that fully describes what has been going on. So what was that word here was Tradition One. A common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on any unity. And I don't know if it was exactly unity, but maybe it was unity of purpose, you know, like let's all roll up our sleeves and do what we have to do to so that this thing doesn't disappear. I also didn't really know much about the difference between a treatment center and the difference between the fellowships, the difference between AA and NA, because those were the two fellowships that were around at that time, or you know, the difference between identifying myself in an AA way or an NA way. I didn't really know any of that stuff, but so I didn't really know anything about Tradition Six. But what I did know, and this was just an intuitive, instinctive gut thing, was that I wanted to be with the people who were addicts, because the people who were, you know, going to AA or somewhere else, well, I never really felt comfortable with them. Having said that, my first sponsor, when I came out of treatment, I was told that I needed to get a sponsor before leaving. You know, they would take us to meetings. They took us to an AA meeting. There was a temporary sponsor list there. I just literally picked a name off the list, was going and asked this person to be my sponsor. Turns out that she was half Greek, which was kind of a weird thing, and half English, older than me, meaning she was 40 and I was 24, so that's not old, but when you're 24, you know, 40 seemed very old, and so well put together. And I was really kind of intimidated and slightly in awe of her, and but she was incredibly helpful to me with practical things. I even ended up, I've shared this before, I've ended up staying in her house, renting a room in her house for a few months, paying minimal rent, but just really getting into new behaviors, like I am renting a room and I am paying my rent and maybe I'm paying part of the bills. So I'm becoming responsible. And I had to get a job. And it just kind of went on. The hanging out with other addicts and starting meetings and just finding our way. I think this is what it was. It was really just finding our way. And it was, I think, the love of the meetings and the people in them that kept me coming back, as well as a really huge fear of not going back to using. So part of the story is that at some point, I think, in that, June. Anyway, summer 1987, there was the World Convention in London, in Wembley. And it was the first time that the World Convention was going to be held outside of the US. So when the bid for the convention was successful, and the people who had gone to the States to present the case for London hosting the convention came back, we had to get this thing organized. So somehow I ended up being on the, you know, in the same idea of, oh, if someone asks me, I'll just say yes. I ended up being part of the committee, like the steering committee, being the assistant treasurer, for the World Convention in London. And I don't know, I think I was 2 years clean, or definitely not 3 years clean at that point. You know, when I think about all this stuff, I have to say that maybe these days we have so many requirements, just so many rules and regulations about what you need to be and do, and in order to have certain service commitments, and really, I don't know how necessary most of them are. I think it really is necessary to be clean. And because the fellowship, of course, is older and there are people with longer lengths of clean time, it might be better to have someone who is longer clean to do a commitment. But really, anybody who is clean and has the desire and the willingness to be of service, I think we need to encourage that and welcome them. And find something for that person who wants to be of service to do, you know, whether it be sharing time cards in a meeting or greeting in a meeting or making coffee, like, come on in and be of service. And service is not this sort of huge, regulated, corporate kind of arrangement that it isn't. It just isn't. And because I have had the experience of doing service in a pretty loose environment and seeing things actually take place that way, i.e., you know, a world convention did happen, even though we were all less than 5 years clean, or most of us were, maybe there were one or two people who were clean longer than that. It's not necessary to be rigid and dogmatic about these things. I mean, I have seen some weird and painful stuff happen. There was a meeting in a country, I'm not going to say which country it was, but there was a meeting on which was the main meeting for that particular city. It was a big city. And it was a big meeting, meaning 40 people would turn up, which is big, you know, for a face-to-face meeting. And there was someone, the secretary, the person chairing, had been doing it for ages. And she said, you know what, she kept saying, yeah, I would like to give up the commitment. At the end, she said, I'm just not going to do this anymore, and we have to find someone. So then someone eventually stepped in and he said, I'm happy to do the commitment, but I am not going to be able to attend the business meetings, because at that time there was a requirement in this meeting that if you're going to have a service commitment, you have to attend the business meeting. And if you're not able to attend the business meeting, then you cannot have the service commitment. And so this member stepped in and he said, I am happy to take on the commitment, but I have a young child and I'm working crazy hours and I won't be able to attend the business meeting because it clashes with my work. And they said, sorry, but you cannot have the commitment. This is what the group conscience was. And there was no one else who was happy to do the commitment. And the meeting closed. Because the meeting closed, I thought, what the fuck, you know, they closed this meeting because I was just to say I was visiting and I had been there for a few months, so otherwise I would have stayed. I wasn't going to be there for long, otherwise I would have stepped in, but I could not believe that this meeting closed, and that because the person who was willing to do the service could not make it to the business meeting. Like, how important is that when you compare it to a meeting closing down, a meeting that had been going for a long time and where a lot of people had been present. And also, out of the 40 people, really just one person was able to take on the commitment. So this type of rigidity in service is really counterproductive, I think, because the most important thing is for the meeting to keep going, because, you know, this is where the message gets carried in the meeting from one addict to another. And tradition 9, which is another one of my favorite traditions, NA as such would never be organized. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. So NA as such is the meetings, is where is the groups who the groups, the entities who put together the meetings where the addicts can go and stay clean by helping each other. And carrying the message to the person who just walks in through the door. So this is the most important thing. If the groups decide to create a service boards and committees, great, you know. I mean, as I said, I am in a translation committee, and which is a subcommittee of the region. And we do good work. We're translating the literature so that the Greek addicts who do not speak English can read the literature. So, you know, the committees and the service bodies, they do good work. They go to the hospitals and the institutions and tell them about NA. They go to the government and give them information about NA and so on. So they put conventions together and so on and so forth. So it's all good work, but it is only there to support NA as such. And it is directly accountable and responsible to the fellowship. And so if NA as such, which is a meeting, is in danger of closing down, who cares about the business meeting, someone not turning up to the business meeting? So I in my mind, things are quite simple and kind of clear. My priority is in terms of my place in NA and my recovery. So, you know, I have started a few meetings or of personally with other addicts. Again, just because my personal recovery depends on NA unity and I'll say NA existence, I'll rephrase the first tradition a little bit and say NA existence. And another thing that I have observed is that certain assumptions that are made in places where the fellowship might be very mature and might be very big and might have been going on for many years are not really directly relevant or even feasible or possible in fellowships that are very small and just starting out and struggling, and they have very few members and who might not speak any English. So I hear this thing being sort of bandied around a lot that says, I have a sponsor who has an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor. And this might be possible in an English-speaking country where the fellowship has been going for decades, and it's possible there because there is a kind of lineage of many addicts in recovery. But if you are living in a little town in a non-English-speaking country and you don't speak any English and there's only three addicts in your town, you know, it's going to be very difficult to get a sponsor, let alone an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor. So the online recovery has really opened up my mind in a new way because I can see how a lot of my assumptions do not translate somewhere else and that I need to keep an open mind, one of the spiritual principles in NA, open-mindedness, meaning if I was to be in that person's situation, how would I experience recovery? You know, rather than saying you have to do it my way, because my way is the way that it works, that this thing works. So, like the exposure to these wonderful fellowships around fellowship, but I mean the different forms, the different manifestations of the fellowship around the world that I have seen, you know, online in the last 3 years almost now, has really blown my mind. It has radically kind of changed something in my heart about NA. It has made me love it even more, and it has made me kind of really love the people who are in places where they don't have the same easy access and the same resources that maybe I have or other people have. So it really has been a wonderful thing. I also want to say something because I've been thinking about this. You know, in the third step we say, or in the 11th step we say, we have this thing of God as you understand him, or as you understood him, and which I have always valued, I have always treasured, and because it gives me the, it tells me you can just be free to choose whatever type of power greater than yourself you like. If you don't believe in anything, that is fine too. Just believe that it is possible to get clean. Work step two, come to believe that it is possible to get clean and stay clean and find a new way to live. Yes, so step two is not theological, it is really just the process of coming to believe. So I love all this stuff. And you know, some of the literature is written in a way that God is presented in a certain way, not so much though in NA literature. But there are places where there is a certain interpretation that, you know, we align, or the program aligns with a particular religion. And I know that it doesn't align, but there is this belief in some places that it's this sort of religion is really where it's at. But when it is presented like this, to me, it is clear, like, no, I don't believe that, and I don't necessarily need to believe that religion to recover, and that's clear. But sometimes, and especially in a lot of the sort of more recent literature, where there is a great, great presentation of spiritual principles, which of course is the backbone of the program, you know, spiritual principles as presented in all the steps and the traditions. But every now and then I will be reading and I think, well, this is not really a spiritual principle. This is somebody's personal belief masquerading as a spiritual principle. And there it gets a little bit more tricky to discern what is somebody's morality and what is a spiritual principle. And so somebody's morality is their own personal kind of decision, but it doesn't necessarily apply to me because I might have a different set of moral codes. So there I kind of have become a little bit like, I need to watch out for this, because as I said, the religion thing is clear and I can see it and can say no or yes, but the morality thing is a little bit more insidious, really. So like strategies for living, and you know, like it all sounds sometimes like a little bit new agey and a little bit therapy and a little bit, I don't know, you know, it kind of just sounds as if at best it's just a bit noisy, and at worst it's like, no, this is, you know, I don't agree with this. So what I do wholeheartedly feel myself in great alignment with is really the basic text. And because the more I read the basic text, the more powerful the statements in it become for me, and the more real they become for me. And I really like the way the sentences are short and they make powerful statements, and that do not try and please everyone. Because when we try and please everyone, then the message is no longer clear, it no longer has power. So, you know, alcohol is a drug. There are people with a disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover, not from some drugs, not from the legal, from the illegal drugs. And, you know, not from, like, if I substitute one drug with another, I'm still using, I'm just substituting. So I need to, and these are things that I took very much for granted for a long time, just because complete abstinence from all drugs was like the bedrock of recovery, and for me it still is. But now I hear some really crazy shit. People like saying, oh, I went to an ayahuasca retreat and took some ayahuasca, and I didn't, this is not using, because I did it for a spiritual experience. Like, it's a drug, you know, it doesn't matter what you took the drug for. And then there's a conversation around this. And, you know, I say my bit, and then I no longer want to get drawn into debates around this stuff, because I value my recovery too much. You know, I don't want to, I just don't want to, I don't want to have debates about what is abstinence and what is not abstinence. And so I have found another thing that I have found through making mistakes is that if somebody, through sponsoring people and not asking the right questions right at the beginning, when someone says, "Will you sponsor me? I am 20 years clean," and I say, "Yes," you know, I say, "No," but now, you know, I say, "When you say you are 20 years clean, are we on the same page on what clean means?" And so if we're not on the same page, then I'm not going to try and convince that person. I'll just say, find someone else. But if we are on the same page, then I'll say, great. And if someone who is not clean says the same thing to me and this, but they want to get clean, I'll say great as well, if I have the time. And the other question that I ask, again, because I learned that I need to ask this question as well, is, do you have a problem with using drugs? Surprisingly, not everybody in NA seems to have a problem with drugs, you know. So I just really want to spend my time with people who suffer, who have the disease of addiction, specifically addiction to drugs, which can then go on to manifest in different ways. But they come in because they had a problem with not being able to stop taking drugs, you know, and then drug addicts. And this is really the person that I want to be sharing my recovery with, not a person who has some other kind of, I don't know, psychological issue, which might be very severe for them, but it's not what I want to spend my time, nor am I equipped in dealing with. And so things, you know, get clearer for me as time goes on. I love being a member of NA, and being a member for me means actively participating in my personal recovery and in the ongoing growth of the fellowship wherever I find myself, because I've lived in different countries, and this is really how my gratitude speaks. You know, the thing of my gratitude speaks when I care and I share the NA way. It needs to be put into some kind of action. So it's the fellowship, the program, recovery, all of these things is what my life is about, really. And I have not said anything about this, but I have lived until now, from the time I got clean, a very full and in many ways joyful, in other ways painful life. You know, I have worked, I have traveled, I have been in relationships, I have been out of relationships, I have gotten divorced, you know, my parents died, my sister died, I studied, lots of things, life things have happened, and they keep happening. And the only reason they keep happening is because I stay clean, I come to meetings, I speak with people, I read the literature, I take what I need from the literature that I don't fully kind of align with, I take what I need from it and I leave the rest. And I just kind of try and find the people in recovery that I feel are good for me, you know, not the people who are not good for me. Even though at the end of the day, I guess we're all good for each other because we're all in NA trying to get better. So I think I will leave it there. And of course, Steve, you are absolutely right. I started speaking and here we are. Quite a few minutes later, but thank you for asking me, and once again, thank you for keeping Higna going. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Jay, who's also been a huge part of my recovery, and you know, online. Just my introduction to online recovery was through the NA at Home meetings in Australia that Jay was chairing at the time. And I've said this before, they were really a lifesaver for me, the NA at Home and Higna, at a time where I had just moved to Portugal and there was no English speaking NA. And so thank you, and it's still going today. So thank you again, and I will leave it there.